Welcome to the Broadband Bunch, a podcast about broadband and how it impacts us all. Join us to learn about the state of the industry and the latest innovations and trends. Connect with the thought leaders, pioneers, and policymakers helping to shape your future through broadband. This episode of the Broadband Bunch is sponsored by ETI Software, your zero-touch automation experts. By Calix, simplify, excite, grow. By DXTEL, creators of the Harper Broadband Marketing Library. By ITK Solutions Group, process first, technology second. And by Utopia Fiber, building a more connected nation. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Broadband Bunch. We are at Broadband Communities 2022, coming to you from the Harrison Edwards Summit Studio. My guest today is Joey Wender, the director of the Capital Projects Fund with the U.S. Department of Treasury. Joey, welcome to the Broadband Bunch.
Great to be here.
Hey, you've got a really exciting message to share. I just heard you speak with a bunch of the other organizations. But before we dive into that, could you sort of give us the background of your origin story?
Sure. My origin story. I'm a lawyer. I came to Capitol Hill, to D.C. In 2009, and I worked for 13 years on the Hill.
Wow.
The last 10 of which for Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, who, as most of your listeners probably know, wrote a lot of the landmark telecom laws that govern the United States today. So I had a tremendous tutorial in telecom and broadband over the last decade, also because the senator sat on Senate Commerce. And so okay. That was all the issues that I was working on. And so when Congress created the Capital Projects Fund in the American Rescue Plan, they were looking for someone to move over to the executive branch to run the program. I raised my hand and they chose me. And so here I am.
That's awesome. And so, because honestly, before I saw you were appearing here today, I had never heard of the Capital Projects Fund. Could you sort of give us a little bit of an overview of that as well?
Well, your reaction is common because it was created a year ago. So in the American Rescue Plan, which was one of the large COVID relief packages that Congress passed, the Rescue Plan created a $10 billion capital expenditure account, the Capital Projects Fund. And they parked it at Treasury. And they said to Treasury, you create a program that improves people's connections to help them remote work, remote learn, and receive remote health monitoring. And the idea was COVID exacerbated or made more clear the fact that if you don't have an affordable, reliable, high-speed broadband connection at home, you were left out of all sorts of aspects of society. That was clear prior to the pandemic. But boy, did that come into even more focus when we were all trapped at home and we had to rely on broadband to do everything. And so that's exactly what our program is designed, is to reach those communities that have been disadvantaged and have been unconnected historically.
So now you're in charge of $10 billion, just sort of the tip of the spear, because obviously with all the legislation that's come down in the last few years, there's just an avalanche of money coming down, but you're sort of like the first sort of step in. Could you kind of talk about that as well in terms of how that's sort of rolling out?
Sure, and I appreciate the metaphor. There are so many metaphors we like to use. Am I the first wave onto the beach? Is there a military metaphor? Anyways, it's true. So our money's ready to go. You know, what I just said in the session just now is it's often that states are waiting on Washington. In this case, Washington's waiting on states. The money has been allocated. Every state knows exactly how much it's going to get, anywhere between 100 and a little over 500 million for California. We're waiting on their applications to come in to explain, this is how we intend to use your funds. This is the broadband grant program we intend to deploy. This is how we're going to follow Treasury's rules. And right now, sitting here on May 3rd, we're weeks away from making our first state plan approvals.
And just
Out of curiosity, is it one of those things where you're saying that you're waiting for the states? Are some states better prepared that have moved forward, or is it one of those things where everybody's kind of queuing up, or how have states done so far?
It's the laboratory of democracy out there. There's a wide variation between states. We've had over a dozen apply to date, and those are the states that were clearly prepared. They were sophisticated, that had broadband plans on the shelf, that saw this opportunity coming, or have previously had money being funded by their state legislatures to deploy broadband in their states. So those plans have come in. Now it's a rolling basis. It's like college admissions, right? You have to apply between now and late September, and we're going to review them as they come in. Look, there's going to be a variation between what comes in. We know anecdotally that there's a lot of states that are close to finishing their application and applying. We also know that there's going to be stragglers that have just set up, we'll leave those states nameless, but have just set up broadband offices months ago, recently. And so it's going to take them quite a bit more time to ramp up.
The broadband offices are super critical to this process, are they not?
Absolutely. So our money is allocated to governors, and governors, designate where that money flows within their state operations. For the most part, those go to broadband offices. You would think a broadband office should be the one to be making decisions about, okay, how are we going to set up this program? Where are the areas with greatest need in our states? Look, in 2022, every state should have a broadband office. And not only should have a broadband office, should have multiple employees in a broadband office.
Right. No, it's incredible, because I think you're exactly right, where the pandemic sort of put a spotlight on the fact of how important broadband is and right. is going to be. So how important is a broadband office?
Well, it's essential. You think about every state has a roads office, right? Has a highway department, has a transit department, has a water department. Well, broadband's just as important. It is an essential service that we cannot live without, that people in 2022 cannot live without. And so think of it along those same lines. Wouldn't it be bizarre if a state didn't have some type of water office or electricity office or roads, a road department?
Well, I know it's so funny when, as you're just, wandering the halls here at Broadband Communities, it's, it really is the fourth utility. It's one of those things where we're at a point now where people have no idea what's coming down the pike. They talk about connectivity and bringing broadband to folks for the house, but there's going to be IoT. There's going to be so much going on that, I think you're 100% right. It's like a broadband office is essential for the, to get geared up and ready to go. For these states, is for the capital funds, is it only states are the only ones who are eligible to get the funds for the...
Our money flows to states. Okay. And it's states that have to decide, with a large degree of community engagement, where the areas in their state are in greatest need. So equity is a key component of our program.
And so to that point earlier, when you were on the talk, one of the great things that you said was that when the states submit their proposals, what exactly do they need to do to sort of tick off the boxes to make sure that that the funds that they're getting are used properly?
Sure. First, any ISP that gets our money has to build to 100 symmetrical. Let me say that again. You have to build to 100. Yeah, right. You have to build to 100 symmetrical. That is a very forward-leaning, future-proof speed, which will likely result in mostly fiber being deployed. Right? We're making these investments not for next year or for the year after. We're making these investments for the next few decades. That's the idea. This is taxpayer dollars that we are investing here, and we need to be doing it in the most effective and efficient way to ensure these connections can serve people for decades to come.
Absolutely. It's the evolution of telecom, where it's copper wire for the last 40 to 70 years, and now this is just the next iteration. So yeah, I it's one of those things where every time I hear that, where people set the floor as like, hey, listen, it's going to be 100 by 100, I just get so excited, because I think that is the way we need to tackle this, because technology, you know, is only getting faster. It's only getting more important. And connectivity is the foundation for it all.
Yes. And that's why we've put our thumb on the scale in favor of fiber. Because fiber, as you know, 100 symmetrical is just the beginning with what's capable to run through fiber.
So in terms of the funds themselves, can you sort of elaborate in terms of what they can use, the states can use the funds for?
Sure. So there's three presumptively eligible uses for the funds. First is broadband infrastructure, which we expect to be the vast majority of the $10 billion. Sure. The other two buckets are, we call them digital technologies. So that's laptops and tablets and public Wi-Fi. And then the third bucket is multipurpose community centers.
Could you sort of elaborate on that?
Sure. A multipurpose community center, it's obvious how that can be a center, a place for people to access the three things that I ticked off at the beginning, right? It's remote work, telework, and applying for jobs. It's remote educational opportunities, and it's health monitoring. You know, a multipurpose community center or a library could certainly achieve all three of those goals.
Awesome. And then in terms of flexibility, what type of flexibility are you giving for the in terms of for the states for these three areas? Is it one of those things where you leave it up to the states, or are there any parameters that you guys...
No, it's the state's decision. But drilling a little bit more deeper on the broadband requirements. So we talked about 100 symmetrical. After that, states have the flexibility to build out to any location that is not currently served by 100 down, 20 up. We think that that's the baseline, the minimum you need to survive in our modern economy at home, with multiple adults remote working and multiple children doing their homework. That's the minimum that you need to support a modern day household. The other key point I'd like to make is every ISP that uses our money to build out has to participate in the FCC's affordability program.
Fantastic.
The ACP. Because affordability is a key part of this as well. You could have access to the internet, but if you can't afford it, you're not signing up. And so that is an essential part of our mission and what we're trying to do.
So obviously, you know, this is the September date is sort of like the cutoff. I guess one of my questions would be, as you're ramping up this program, have you seen some encouraging signs in terms of like some wins that you guys have made already?
Yeah, it's encouraging because, you know, we've already had over a dozen states apply, and we're about to make these awards, and they're going to be very public awards of hundreds of millions of dollars. And my hope, our hope at Treasury, is that we make these awards, we lift them up, and the straggling states, or the states that have not applied, look at those states and say, yeah, okay, I'm going to do that.
Right.
There it is. There's the model.
No, it's so
true. And
it true.
Creates momentum for the whole program.
Right. Hey, it's like, hey, guys, listen, you know, the money's coming. And so one of those things where, so in terms of distribution, you said $500 million for California. Is it distributed in terms of like, does a state like Massachusetts get 100 million, 120? Is it based on population, topography?
It is based on it's a formula. It's based on population, but then there's two sub variables. One is percentage of the population that is rural, and the other is percentage of the population that lives below some percentage of the poverty line.
Okay, that makes
right,
sense.
So it's low income and rural give a state additional dollars.
Okay, and would you say that sort of the great thing about this program is that obviously there are areas that don't have connectivity issues because the free market takes care of that.
Sure.
But you guys are sort of like filling in the cracks where it's like, hey, because we don't want people to get left out of the, you know, the digital divide is a real thing. So is that sort of what, you know, one of the things that you guys are charged with is like, hey, let's make sure that everyone kind of is pulled along.
Right. Let's step back for a second. Why are there tens of millions of Americans that don't have affordable, reliable, high-speed internet at home? The answer is because there's been a market failure, right?
Right.
The market, left to the market, providers have decided, I'm not building out there. Excessive cost, topography, low density, so not enough insufficient revenue to support a network. So they haven't spent the money to build out, to trench, to put wires up on poles. Our money is to serve as a catalyst. It's the capital expenditure. It's taking that capital expenditure out of the equation and saying to ISPs, whichever incumbents, competitors, munis, community-based, whatever it is, whoever wants to play, we're saying we'll subsidize the build-out, the capital expenditures. So now you just have to operate the network. I think that's going to induce a lot of build-out, and that is going to bring us closer and closer to that point when everybody's connected in the United States.
It's awesome. So obviously, you know, we've got these 12 states that are sort of the, you know, they're head of the class.
Over 12 states. I can't say exactly, okay, so I keep saying over a dozen. That's why I'm leaving it ambiguous.
But, you know, you're giving away $10 billion. So have there been any challenges that you guys have had in terms of, like, either from, you know, in terms of if someone submits a document and they might be a little light, or is it one of those things where is there anything in terms of challenges that you've sort of experienced?
You know, initially, we've had a really positive experience because the states that are coming in early were ready.
Right, right.
Now, it's an iterative process, right? A state comes in and, you know, it's our job to ask questions on their application, ask for more information. We have to be good stewards of taxpayer dollars.
Absolutely.
So if you're going to give, of course. So if you're going to give out hundreds of millions of dollars, you better, you know, dot your I's and cross your T's. But for the most part, these early states have been very easy to work with. You know, I think the challenges come later.
Okay.
Right. I think the challenges come with states that are not prepared, and you know, it's unclear what type of plans are going to be submitted as we get closer to September. Now, that's why we're going to lift up these projects that we're going to approve. That's why I have an outreach team that is working directly with every state. That's why I come to conferences like this, because we're trying to educate states and ISPs to submit good applications so that we can easily approve them.
Right, because this opportunity is not going to happen, you know, every it's going to be...
Who knows?
Absolutely, right? It's one of those things where we've got this you know, an avalanche of funds coming in. It's like, listen, everybody, it's like, let's get focused and let's move it. And to your point earlier, I think that hopefully the states that are still sort of putting their plan together will use the other states as a sort of a North Star to say, hey, listen, this is how we're doing it. At least they're, you know, they're kind of like blazing the trail. And so hopefully that'll help, you know, make your job a little bit easier.
That's the hope.
Hey, this has been great, Joey. As we begin to wind down, you know, there's two questions that we love to ask all our guests. The first one is our Back to the Future question, where I get to, you know, I put the keys to the DeLorean in your hand. You get to go back in time 3, 5, 7 years, however you want, and whisper in your ear or someone else's ear to give them sort of a little nudge in the direction. Say, hey, listen, if you kind of do this, you might possibly, you know, beneficial. What would you say?
I would say and whisper in, is it my ear or someone else's ear, or you know, anybody's ear?
Anybody's ear. It's up to you.
Yeah, what I would say is 10-1 is not going to be enough. Right? Clearly, everyone had, it was clear even 5 years ago that the amount of bandwidth that was being consumed by an average consumer or an average household was increasing at an exponential level. Exponentially. And so I would say to someone then, like, you know, we're going to need really fast speeds. You know, you're going to need some tremendous capacity. This is coming. This is obvious. Go to the, I mean, I remember I went to the Consumer Electronics Show, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. IoT was the buzz then. So it was obvious that everything was going to be connected soon.
Right.
And so I think that's, we're oftentimes not, we can be late in terms of, you know, deploying the technologies that are needed. And, you know, the more forward-looking we are, the more future-proof our plans are, you know, it helps our economy.
Absolutely. And then obviously the converse, if we could, you know, unfurl the crystal ball, let you look into the future, Joey, and sort of like, where do you see broadband in the, hopefully in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, we'll have solved it. Okay. And it will all be over and everybody will congratulate me and NTA. No, I think we will get to a point where nearly all Americans will be supported by a high-speed broadband connection. I think we will make tremendous headway on the affordability side in the next 3 to 5 years. And so I think we're going to be in a far better position. I mean, we better be after we're spending tens of billion dollars, yep, a far better position than we are today, where you have ubiquitous deployment of high-speed internet. That is my goal, and that is my expectation.
I mean, I love you. You're shooting for the moon, which is you know, which is great. So, what's the best way for folks to find out about the program itself, or if they have any questions? What's sort of the best path that they can go?
Sure, you should go to our website. It's treasury.gov and find the Capital Projects Fund. We've got an email box that we monitor daily, regularly. I've got multiple members of our outreach team, and we are happy to engage and talk with both states and communities, but also potential providers about the program and, you know, help and assistance that you need. Because we all have a role to play in ensuring that this is a success.
Joey, this has been a phenomenal visit. Really appreciate you coming to Broadband Communities, coming on the Broadband Bunch, because it's folks that you are boots on the ground. I saw you after the talk, you talked to 15 or 20 people, you gave them their time, and it's something that we all really appreciate. So thanks so much for coming on the show and coming down to Houston.
Thank you, and thanks for everything you do.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Broadband Bunch. For Joe Coldabella and everyone else, see you later.